This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Loans versus grants, the divisive issue for European leaders looking to revive coronavirus-battered economies. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Talks among the EU's 27 member states will resume today, stretching into the fourth straight day, but deep differences remain about how to fund a more than $800 billion recovery fund. Southern nations like Spain and Italy, which were hard hit by the pandemic, prefer more grants, which they wouldn't have to repay. The so-called Frugal Four northern nations have pushed back hard against that idea, advocating for more of a loan-based system. A breakthrough could be on the horizon, and the magic number is $446 billion. That's how much leaders have said they're willing to accept as grants, the rest in loans. That figure is far below the $572 billion target set back in May. From Brussels, the BBC's Kevin Conley explains the road to agreement has been paved with heated debate.
This was the first time in 5 months that the EU's leaders had gathered face-to-face. The talks have been difficult and the atmosphere fractious. At one point, the French President Emmanuel Macron was reported to have banged the table with his fist in frustration. The Dutch Prime Minister Mark Rutte has emerged as something of a bogeyman for those who wanted a quick deal. He wants handouts to come as loans, not grants, and he wants them to be strictly supervised. The Hungarian leader Viktor Orbán said he didn't know why Mr. Rutte hated Hungary. And Italy's Giuseppe Conte warned the Dutch leader that a few days' popularity at home would quickly be replaced by a sense across Europe that he'd prevented the continent from responding to an economic crisis.
The BBC's Kevin Conley there. While checking the numbers, European shares are little changed as investors closely watch the outcome of this afternoon's meeting. The travel and leisure sector, meanwhile, is the biggest decliner today in Europe. It's been one of the industries hardest hit by the coronavirus pandemic as flights were grounded and people the world over told to stay home. Still, economies here have reopened, and today Virgin Atlantic is betting some travelers will want to get back in the sky sooner rather than later. It's restarting some of its flights with services from London to Orlando and Hong Kong. But what about the rest of the industry? Thomas Reinert is head of the Airlines for Europe, an organization representing 70% of Europe's carriers.
Aviation in particular has been amongst the sectors hit the hardest and is expected to be one of the last to recover as well. Most analysts still agree that the return to 2019 levels, which was a good year, is not expected for another 3 years, so not before 23.
And as you sort of noted there, flight capacity is still half of what it was a year ago. The International Air Transport Association did a survey recently, and they found that top concerns for travelers included cabin air quality on board and the ability to safely social distance passengers from each other. So how does the industry as a whole need to work to convince travelers that their health and safety measures go far enough once they are in the air?
We've worked very closely with the airports, the European Commission and European health authorities to come out with some clear guidelines. Actually, flying still is the safest mode of public transport these days. And the reason for that is that since SARS and the MERS health issues, which were global, the airline industry has been preparing itself very well. So you need to communicate about this to the larger public and that people should feel confident to go to the airport to check in and to fly again.
But do you see that work being effective? Have you seen a pickup in bookings for later in the year, for example? Do you think that message is getting to consumers?
The message has certainly get to consumers. We've seen domestic travel pick up first, but the challenge we have in Europe is that even though we may say from the aviation side that flying is safe and the European Commission is confirming that, member states are acting like there are issues to travel. And it's not only people who want to fly, it's international travel in Europe in general that people are actually very confused. There's a lot of uncertainty. And the summer is the most important season for the airline business. This is when we have to make our money. It's not going as well as we had expected. And I think the confusion that is caused by national governments is not helping us.
Thomas Reinert, head of Airlines for Europe. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks very much.
A mission to Mars is a key component of the United Arab Emirates' plan for a post-oil economy. And today, in a race with the U.S. and China, the UAE launched its first space mission to study weather and climate on the Red Planet. The BBC's Samir Hashmi has more on that story.
Over the last decade, the UAE has partnered with other nations to launch satellites, but the Mars mission is its most ambitious space program. The head of the project, Omran Sharaf, believes that this venture is critical for the country's future.
The main reason behind this was the creation of an advanced science and technology sector here. So it's about the future of our economy, the post-oil economy.
In recent years, the space race in the Middle East has started to intensify. Israel launched a new spy satellite called the Ofak 16. In a promotional video, Amnon Hariri, the head of space administration at Israel's Ministry of Defense, says
the satellite will serve to bring intelligence that will allow us to monitor threats that we are facing from far away to nearby regions.
Israel has been the region's leader in space flight, but apart from the UAE, Iran and Saudi Arabia have also been investing in their own space programs. Badr Al-Saf, an expert at the Carnegie Middle East Center, thinks that the Mars mission will strengthen the UAE's standing here in the region.
You have the US and China also launching their own probes in July as well. So the Arab world, represented here by the UAE, they want to show that they are not a power to be ignored.
And if everything goes according to plan, then the probe will enter the Mars orbit in 2021, the same year during which the UAE will also celebrate its 50th anniversary. If the project is successful, then it will be a step forward for the scientific community. But more significantly, it may alter the power dynamics in the region.
The BBC's Samir Hashmi reporting from Dubai there. And in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.